Ben Stone, are you just getting up? Are you up? Why are you up? It's the middle of the night, man. Start your chores because you're Amish. Well, here's my idea, and I'm recording my end of this call. I want to start a podcast supergroup, and I want to record a podcast with you tonight for the first episode.
Yes.
Well, cool.
That'd be great.
Cool. I want to do this, you know, like, Nima's not up in the middle of the night, and that's when I get crazy and need to podcast even more than we do already. So I'm going to have different guests on this cast, and it's called the Anarchy Supergroup Podcast.
It would be like Cream, like back in the 60s when they made the first supergroup.
I want to be Ginger Baker. Did you ever see that live at Cream? Cream live at London Hall or something movie?
I don't know. I've seen many of those.
It was their last show, and Ginger Baker's just fucking nodding out, almost dead on heroin, like explaining his drums backstage before the show.
Those guys are something else.
Yeah, I really like Cream. They kind of invented the supergroup thing and the everyone solo at the same time thing.
Yeah.
Although they weren't the first supergroup. Wasn't Brad or Hot Flash or Hot Tuna or somebody? Who was it?
Yeah, there was somebody put together right before them. There's a huge conspiracy thing. I don't know if you've ever seen this about whatever the canyon, Laurel Canyon, I think, that a bunch of these people all lived in Frank Zappa's house in, I think it was Laurel Canyon in L.A. And there's all kinds of weird, there's like 20, 30 pages on the internet of conspiracy stuff just on that one house. It's crazy.
If there's only 30 pages on the internet, I'd barely call that a conspiracy.
Well, each page is super long.
Well, I rediscovered Zappa last night. I was reading about Augustus Owsley Stanley, or Stanley Owsley, the Grateful Dead's LSD manufacturer and also sound man, and who was actually the grandson of a U.S. senator who was very anti-prohibition. But but I was reading, you know, it said in the article on Wikipedia about Stanley that he on Owsley that he's mentioned in a Zappa song. I'm like, oh yeah, and I went back and went on YouTube and listened to the whole album absolutely free couple times through, which, you know, I heard when I was like 12, and it really warp me. It was one of those like everything you know is wrong moments, like that and reading Steal This Book at 12. And but there's a line in it that says, I'll go to Frisco and sleep on Owsley's floor. It's the whole record's making fun of hippies and flower power. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but there's this running thing in that album of like the ghost of the recording studio. It's called the central scrutinizer. It's like the sensor built into the recording studio, and it's always whispering between songs like, this is the central scrutinizer. And one of the things that the central scrutinizer says either on that album or another album is something about like, there's all these people in Laurel Canyon and I can't get them. They're all over the house and I don't know what to do about it. Something like that.
Yeah, I had the website bookmarked for a long time, and I'd go back and I'd read, like I said, how many pages it was, but each page was like,
scroll down forever.
Yeah, and they would have pictures and all kinds of stuff. And when you first started out, it's like, okay, there's some crazy theories here, but just stick with me and I'll get through this. And they'd lay something kind of mild out, you know. And then it'd be like halfway through, it's like, yeah, Jim Morrison was on. His dad was a commander of an aircraft carrier or whatever, or destroyer or something. And then links that into how he didn't get drafted and how all of his songs like suddenly came out of nowhere and then he disappeared. And it's when I say it, it doesn't sound crazy. It sounds stupid. But the way they lay it out, or the way this guy lays it all out, it's like, I don't believe this, but it's entirely plausible. And that's what's scary about it. It's like, there's a lot of things that I think, I might believe that, but it's not that plausible. But you know, it's like the opposite as you go through all the waves, and it might just be that there's so much of it that the guy could be telling you that, you know, Mars is made out of green cheese or something, and you would believe it by reading that much. But
it's interesting to me, just the one thing you said about Jim Morrison. I mean, he, you know, he's a fortunate son, I guess. I didn't know that. I knew his dad was a high military guy, but I didn't know that he got him out of the draft. That sounds plausible. And, you know, Morrison repaid his dad by, when Time magazine asked about his parents, he said, "Oh, they're dead."
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, there's a bunch of connections to the military in this whole group of people that were at Laurel Canyon there. It's like, I can't remember now, this has been like 2 or 3 years since I read all this, but the guy starts listing everybody that's connected to either high government officials in the National Security Administration, or, you know, in Kennedy's administration, or in LBJ's administration, or their high-level military. And there's a movie recording, like a secret CIA or whatever movie recording studio at the very end of Laurel Canyon. And there's all kinds of, you know, connections that he makes to that. It's crazy.
Well, Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, everybody from like hardcore rock in its beginning all the way to like the Monkees and stuff. He ties everybody into this conspiracy.
Well, I've often wondered about, you know, which countercultural icons from the 60s on were government plants. And, you know, the only thing I can think of is that the really good artists who may have been government plants were probably busted and turned, you know, like, mm-hmm. you do this for us and we'll keep you out of the cage. I can't imagine the government creating, you know, a Jimi Hendrix in their labs.
Yeah.
I can imagine them creating a Monkees, but actually Timothy Leary said that the Monkees did more to spread, you know, disrespect for authority than anybody else, because they were the first TV show that showed relatively young people hanging out unsupervised in a house having fun.
That kind of makes sense, because they were appealing to like the 12 to 16 crowd, and, you know, you get them young.
Yep.
The
other day on Free Talk Live, they were talking about LSD being used to treat alcoholism. Did you hear that one?
I didn't hear that on Free Talk Live, but I've read a couple articles on it lately.
Yeah, and, you know, they were talking about, like, why was this just discontinued? And, you know, obviously the answer was that they were saying, and the answer is that, you know, because the government doesn't want to do things that are helpful. But I really think that the government was more afraid of LSD than any other drug. I mean, pot and heroin probably kept more people down and kept a revolution from happening. But LSD really, you know, one hit changes people's brains forever to where they just don't like authority much anymore.
Yeah, that's really true. I'm not, you know, advocating everybody run out and take a trip. But on the other hand,
I'm tripping right now. No, I'm not. I've been totally clean and sober since 1994. I haven't even had a drink since then. But I've tripped back in the day. You know, the first three opened my consciousness, and the 100 after that just scared me. But the three at the beginning, you know, the effect was still there. It's still here.
Yeah.
I'm not still tripping, but it's, my doors to perception are cleansed still.
Yeah, I would have to kind of agree with that. It's like the very first time I was expecting something along the lines of like a, well, this is a dead word nowadays, but like a Quaalude or something that would really drop me down on my knees and really put me out. And when it didn't, I was just like, wait a minute, this is not a drug. This is a whole new world I just stepped into, you know?
Well, I called into that show on Free Talk Live and turned them on to the fact that the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous actually experimented with LSD in the 60s for helping alcoholics, you know, decades after he got sober. And wanted to distribute it at all AA meetings. And the members of the group he founded kind of shouted him down with the group conscience and said, no, 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 Bill, I don't think we'll be doing that. but, you know, basically AA is a spiritual program, and LSD can facilitate things that, resemble or are spiritual experiences.
Yeah, and without getting all mystic and everything about it, it's one form of hallucinogenic or another is prominent in almost every major religion if you really get into it. And that even includes for any, you know, really hardcore Christian type people that are concerned about what I just said, there's, you know, I'm sorry, but there's even references in the Bible to that kind of thing. So
with Catholics, is it wine?
Well, there was a lot of moldy bread going around in the Dark Ages.
Ergotamine.
So that was something when I was talking to I'm going to mess up his name. Mendenhausen, I think so. Don Mendenhausen.
Yeah, Grandpa Simpson of the libertarian movement.
Yeah. He was talking about the one mushroom that's prominent in northeastern Europe. That's that little red capped mushroom,
Amanita muscaria.
Yeah, and it was like prominent in art, including church art, throughout Europe through the Middle Ages, and they just slide it in there. You know, it's like nobody
Alice in Wonderland
this.
Too.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to call this episode "Tripping with the Bad Quaker." I think.
I think you made a good observation there, though, that marijuana and other drugs like that have a tendency to, it's like, yeah, you're sitting on the couch watching MTV, you don't want to, who wants to rebel, who wants to, you know, let's just chill.
Yeah, and if you want to go even deeper into conspiracy theories, MTV was invented by a member of the Monkees.
Oh, that's right. What's his name, the tall guy with the hat?
So they probably busted him after the Monkees broke up and then said, okay, here's what you're going to do. There's actually a Simpsons where it turns out that the Navy is putting subliminal messages that say join the Navy into every rock video on TV. And Lisa figures it out. She cracks the code.
He was independently wealthy before the Monkees even existed.
Yeah, his mother invented liquid paper. So my stepson shipped off to basic training today for the Army.
Yeah, I heard you saying that the other day.
I'm not going to say anything bad about it. I love him, and I can't say. I don't want him being shot at, basically. You know, he knows how I feel about war. I've been anti-war since I was 5 years old and watched the Vietnam War on TV in 1969 and said, this is horrible.
Yeah, it was really rough. I think I mentioned this on one of my podcasts the other day. That, you know, I remember sitting there as a kid, and I had my brother-in-law in Vietnam, in the Marines, and my brother in the Marines, you know, waiting day to day to find out whether he was going to go or not. And it was just, and the newscast every Friday night would give the body counts, and it wouldn't be
just like.
It was like
a football game. I remember that, man.
Yeah, because it was, they would count how many dead on each side.
Ours.
And how many missing in action, yeah.
Which was the first war where they actually could roughly do that, you know?
Yeah. And it wasn't like now. It's like the whole count, I think, I'm not sure, I'm not up on this, but the whole count is a few thousand from Afghanistan and Iraq all put together, you know, like 6,000 or 8,000 or whatever it is. And I don't mean to belittle that number. It's just...
Wasn't it like a month in Vietnam?
Yeah. You were getting... There were bad weeks where you would get numbers like that in a week. You know, Way City was... I can't remember now the casualty, but it was crazy. It was just out of control. And they're saying that stuff, and I'm like, 8, 9 years old at the time, and knowing that my brother-in-law's there, and my brother could be there in days. It was just horrible.
Are they Quakers?
No, my whole family is Baptist from top to bottom.
How'd you end
I shouldn't say that.
How'd you end up Quaker?
I read Murray Rothbard's... what a four-volume set called Conceived in Liberty.
Oh, I forgot to start this podcast by joking and saying, what are you doing up at 4 in the morning? Oh, you just got up? Oh, you have to go milk your cows because you're Amish.
Yeah.
Because people mix them up.
Yeah, people confuse Amish and Quakers and Mennonites and all of those. But
all those plain
Quakers
dressing folks.
I always say it like this: if you're walking through the mall and there's a Quaker in there, you won't be able to pick him out because he looks just like everybody else.
I'm wearing all black. Does that count as plain dress?
Oh, man.
So, how'd you become Quaker?
Reading Murray Rothbard's Conceived in Liberty.
I read Rothbard, and it didn't turn me Quaker.
Oh, really? Did you read Conceived in Liberty?
No, I don't read books. I don't have the attention span. I listen to podcasts and while I'm watching MTV and tripping.
He devoted like one little tiny section in there to talking about how the Puritans up in the Northeast were, you know, they were really bad people. And I mean bad, like they all pretended to be good church type people, but they were monsters attempting to utilize the state to control everybody and everything.
They were Christian Shereans.
Yeah, they really were. And the Quakers would just basically flip them off and do what they wanted to do. And it just infuriated the Puritans. So they were burning them. They were, you know, they would strip them naked and march them through the streets to humiliate them. And so the Quakers decided, well, all right, they want to strip us naked and walk us through the streets. We'll just go to their churches next Sunday naked. And they would just show up in the church naked and walk up and down the aisles. Hi, how you doing?
So are they Quakers because they were cold?
Say that again?
Were they called Quakers because they were cold?
Oh, no, that was a derogatory term that a judge in, I believe, Scotland threw on him to try to, because he kind of said, you know, you think you're something because you quake before God. You're a bunch of Quakers. And they were just like, whatever, you know. Because the Quakers called them, called the Puritans roundheads because they cut their, they cropped all their hair off and had an unnatural head.
Is Kai Quaker?
I know she borders somewhere, I think, between, what is it you call yourself?
Deist.
Yeah, I think she's somewhere between a deist and a semi-pagan, a deist and a semi-pagan atheist. I think somewhere in that realm.
Yeah.
I hate to classify somebody else that hasn't classified themselves, but, you know.
Yeah, I've classified Nima's religion to somebody who asked without asking him.
How would you classify Nima?
I think a deist leaning towards a lazy Christian. I mean, he's not lazy as a person, but he had a Christian wedding and went to church classes for it, so. And didn't say, this is horse hockey. So, you know, I guess there's some Christian in there.
So he's tolerant.
Oh, yeah. He's tolerant of everybody, as long as they don't try to squash other people like most people in the world do.
Yeah.
Fucking squares. I think
that's really the key when it comes to spirituality, is if you know, if you're not so high-minded that you think you've got the secret and you're open, then, you know, and I don't mean it's like, well, I'll just believe anything anybody tells me, but if you can say, all right, fine, you believe that, as long as you're not aggressing on me, then, you know, I'm comfortable with that.
Well, you know, my mother liked to tell this joke when I was a kid where she said, guy dies and goes to heaven, St. Peter's giving him the tour, and he goes by this one room, and there's a clinking of glasses, and he says, oh, that's the Presbyterians, and they go by this other room, and somebody shouts bingo, and he says, oh, that's the Catholics. And they go by this other room, and there's a dark curtain over it, and St. Peter says, shh, they think they're the only ones up here. Although that would pretty much fit any of those other religions and a lot of religions in my experience.
Yeah. In my parents' families, my dad and pretty much all of his family are really hardcore Baptist. And in my mom's family, her family is split. It's like half of them are Baptists and half of them are bootleggers, pot growers, running from the law, hardcore Appalachian, anything stereotype you can think of that's negative about Appalachia, they're doing it and making money on it.
Toothless hillbillies?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the...
drinking Mountain Dew.
I think that's the general consensus of non-educated people about those non-educated people.
Yeah. There's a certain culture there that revels in that, and just they wave it like a flag, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you want to edit that part out? But I'm sure the people there know who they are and what they do.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. In a sense, they're very proud of their lifestyle and the fact that they can do all of what they do, and there's just nothing the state can do about it, you know. you can't get back in Appalachian. You can't even count those people, much less get them to obey, you know.
Nice. So I'm sure this new podcast will have at least one listener right away, because there's somebody in D.C. that listens to everything I put up. I've seen it on my stats.
Yeah, yeah, I get that too.
Worried about
friends at Langley.
I saw something you posted about some militia being exonerated.
Oh,
some
yeah.
Some false flag being some brave judge calling it like it is.
Yeah, up in Michigan. That,
you know, that, if that happens and the Supreme Court decides Obamacare individual mandate is unconstitutional in the same week, I think some heads are going to explode. They're just going to go, I can't take it. Our tyranny's not working. Steam will be coming out of Eric Holder's ears.
Nah, they'll just figure out somebody else to hassle.
Yeah, the Amish, because they don't fight back.
Yeah. Yeah, they're giving them a pretty hard time, really. I really feel sorry for the Amish.
You know, there's this movie that was made in the early 70s or late 60s. It was an anarcho-capitalist documentary called The Amazing Bread Machine or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That opens with a reenactment of some Amish being driven off their land by government guns.
Hmm. It's been a while since I've seen that, but yeah. Yeah, the Amish have suffered pretty bad at the hands of the government. They are amazingly resilient, though. And a lot of people think that they're a commune, and they're really not. They're seriously in on property rights. I mean, they're, you know, what I own, you know, it's mine.
Yep. I have a lot of cursory knowledge of them because I grew up in upstate New York and went to boarding school in Pennsylvania. And my dad deals with them a lot. He sells wood to them.
Mm-hmm.
He owns property with a lot of big old trees on it. And he'll, from time to time, to pay his property taxes, he'll fell a tree and then sell it to the Amish furniture makers up the road.
Yeah, a big nice walnut tree or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, I worked in eastern Ohio for a while, and I worked for this crazy, lunatic old lady. And mm-hmm. she would have me go out on her forests that she owned and count the walnut trees. It was kind of like Mr. Burns, you know, like, excellent.
Did the count change from time to time? Or?
It didn't while I was there. I didn't work for that long. I was only there about 9 months or so, and I was like, man, I can't handle this anymore. She owned a public utility, a water company, and it fed water to a little community and a hospital. And she was really hardcore left-wing liberal, all the way out the window nutcase. And she would turn off all the chlorine into the system, because she was convinced that, you know, chlorine's bad. I mean, well, it's poison, but it's still, if you're going to run a water utility, it's the
antiseptic.
Law.
Yeah,
yeah. So she would get paranoid about poisoning all the people and turn off the chlorine injection. And I'd come to work, and all the chlorine numbers are out of whack, and I'd have to send out a boil alert and call the radio station and try to get things running again. It was like, man, this woman is crazy.
Now, why wouldn't that happen in in libertarian paradise?
I think it could, except people would expect there to be no fraud involved. So like, if you wanted, no chlorine in your water, then that would be great. But if somebody says, we guarantee your water is going to be chlorinated and clean and not have any bacterial infections or whatever, then they turn off the chlorine, then you could sue them. You could take action against them.
Yeah, I've wondered how entrenched monopolies are with water. Like, I wouldn't do, I don't like that I have to get my water from the city, but it's reasonably priced, but I'm just wondering what would happen if I had the city turn off my water and started buying my water, you know, shipped in on a truck, which people out in the country do anyway sometimes, but I live in town. So I wonder if that would be violating any law, probably.
It's according city to city. There are certain cities that if you have your water turned off or if you have your electricity turned off or whatever, they will confiscate your property and evict you. Because they consider it abandoned.
Yeah. They don't want you doing no possum living. Do you know about possum living?
Say that again?
You ever see that book, Possum Living?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
It's a OG, you know, original gangster, old-timey, old, it's a prepper book from about 1975.
Wow.
And it's written by the sister of a friend of mine that I went to boarding school with, and she came in and spoke. I did a lengthy Freedom Fiends about this, so I won't go into it too long, but she did she came and spoke at my school when she was like 19 and I was like 15, and she was the first published author I met, and it really inspired me. And she and her dad were living on like $600 a year.
Wow.
In Pennsylvania, and doing a lot of things you probably couldn't quote unquote get away with now, but like, you know, she was too smart for school, so her dad just came to school one day and told the teachers that she was moving to California. They were moving to California, and, you know, the girl hugged all her friends goodbye and just stayed at home and just went to the library. I don't know what happened when those people saw her around town all the time, but, you know, they were farming and hunting and moonshining and doing all sorts of things that saved a lot of money and living on like $600 a year. And wow. I was really impressed by it when I was a kid.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. I don't live like that. I'm deep in digital luxury, but it inspired me.
My dad for a while took a turn at living off grid. This was late 70s, and he had made an invention. I mentioned this on a podcast once, so hopefully it's not too boring, but he made an invention in the late 70s that was kind of, for its industry, it was kind of revolutionizing the business. And we stood to make just a huge buttload of money off of it. And then a company came in and utilized some really obscure patent that they had, not on the machine that he had invented, because before he invented the machine, nobody could do this process. But they exercised patent rights on an aspect of the process, and what they were really wanting was just to have a chunk. You know, they just wanted a piece of it. And my dad's like, you know what? No, I'm just going to shut the thing down. And he closed the business, put the machine in the backyard, and let it rust. And we moved out into the middle of the Mojave Desert, off grid, no phone, no electricity, nothing.
What was the invention?
It was kind of like, to describe the thing, it hooked to the front of our big Ditch Witch trenching machine, and it was like it had an auger that went straight down vertically, down to like the five, 6 feet down or something, and then it injected poison down at the root level to kill one particular disease that was wiping out the nut farms, the nut orchards in the San Joaquin Valley in California. And he just, you know, he made enough in the 1 year that we ran the thing that we just moved out in the desert and, you know, forget it. This is where I'm staying.
I think whoever owned the packet thicket that knocked him out of business probably sold the whole thing to the U.S. government, because those Bearcats that they use, you know, that all the militarized police departments are getting now free from the DHS, have an attachment that's like a giant pole to inject gas into a house to drive people out of it.
Wow. Lovely.
My great-grandfather invented the cattle chute, and somebody stole it from him and patented it.
Wow. Patents, it's theft.
It's theft, but I wouldn't mind if my great-grandfather had made millions off that and I had it in a pile sitting in front of me because people had died.
you wouldn't turn the money down, huh?
I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. And, you know, when I'm 90, if Social Security still exists, I'm going to get it because I paid into it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, in that sense, I'm of the camp of the opinion that anything you can legally get from the government, you ought to do it while it's still standing.
And well, I own a few stocks that pay a little bit of dividends that are, you know, from back when I got them, that I wouldn't buy now, and I don't believe in the companies that have them, but I'm not going to go burn the stock certificates.
Right. Well, you know, they're going to do, whether it's an evil company or whether it's the government or whatever, they're going to do what they're going to do, and they're going to rob the maximum amount they can rob, no matter whether you take $200 a month from them or not, you know.
Yeah.
So if you can capture a certain amount of money from an evil entity and turn it to good, then, you know, and the evil entity is not going to say, oh, well, Michael W. Dean just took $200 out of our savings or out of our Social Security fund or whatever. We've got to go rob an additional $200. No, they're going to rob as much as they can rob all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
this is kind of almost bordering on what I used to hate that punk rocker, anarchist, leftists I knew back in the day would say who were on welfare, which I wouldn't be, of just, well, they take it from us. We can take it from them. And I'm like, they don't take it from you. You don't have a job. But, you know, they take it in other ways.
Yeah.
And they take it in sales tax and they take it in laws. But I wouldn't be on welfare. I was 20 years ago for a minute, but I wouldn't now. But it's almost what I'm saying is almost bordering in degrees, in shades on what they were saying that I hated. But fuck it.
Doing it anyway.
Yeah, I'm not practicing to get the Anarchist Academy Award. You know, I'm just being me.
Right.
Or the golden anarchy nugget or whatever they give for the best anarchist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm of that mind. I try not to aggress on anyone. And I try to spread that message as much as possible. But, you know, I mean, we have to use the highways. We don't have a choice. And, you know.
Yeah, I always hate that. Well, you use the roads. You're not a real libertarian. Fuck you.
You're not going to pick it apart intellectually and make an argument, huh?
I've gotten to the point of just, well, fuck you to so many people. Just, I don't have. Well, one thing I do is, I have a lot of cut and paste things that, you know, I'm so sick of answering the same thing over and over. I just have a list of little app on my computer that I hit like, oh, the roads question. That's hyphen R. And then it's just pasted on Facebook. And then, you know, two or three posts later, I just block them.
That was kind of part of the motivation of me doing a podcast to begin with. I was getting so tired of going over the same stuff over and over on 20 different postings on, you know, on 20 different locations on the internet.
It's now, like, you can just send them a URL.
Yeah. And then I found out, well, now that I'm doing a podcast, I'm so busy, I'm not on all those other locations on the internet.
Something I really like about it. I mean, I kind of look at the internet, this sounds really crass, but I kind of look at the internet as a radio station, as a one-way communication.
Yeah.
You know, I chat with people and stuff when I'm bored, but what I've got to say is very, 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 very important, and people should listen to it. And if they don't want to, they don't have to.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder if it's like, am I letting my ego get away with me, you know, and make myself think that I'm more important than I am. But then on the other hand, I think sometimes, you know, this real, some of the things that are clear in my mind that to me are really basic, some people don't know this.
Yeah.
And if I don't say it and nobody else says it where they can hear it, then they're not going to know it, you know? And sometimes, like when we mentioned reading Murray Rothbard earlier, when I first bumped into Rothbard's writings back in the early 80s, and then it kind of got lost in my library and didn't go anywhere from there. But then, when I rediscovered Rothbard, I started reading For New Liberty, and it was like, you know, all the things in my mind that I thought, I'm the only one that believes this nonsense, this is crazy, you know, I believe this because of how many head wounds I've had or something. And then I'm reading Rothbard, and it's like, no, he is saying exactly what I've believed right along, except he's saying it in a sane way. Which means I'm not entirely crazy.
Yeah.
This is real.
Why have you had so many head wounds? I'm not much younger than you, and I've had none.
Well, it's kind of like once you get started, you just can't stop. I always say it like this. I've got in excess of 35 concussions. And the reason I say that is because I can clearly remember and describe 35 concussions. But I think my first concussion happened before I can actually remember it. I fell down a set of stairs and was knocked out pretty hard. And that was at like 2 years old. And then from then on, it was just like the level of clumsiness got worse and worse. And then I did a lot of like surfing and body surfing as a teenager. And so you end up laying on the beach half unconscious every now and then. And then a lot of people ask, especially when I'm talking to a doctor, they'll say, well, you know, were you a boxer or something? Well, yeah, but I never got hit in the head the whole time I boxed, so so that doesn't count. But I never, I was only hit in the head one time in a fight, and I was in a lot of fights. But that wasn't in a boxing ring, that was in an actual fight. So that doesn't count, but I've had like I had a door of a van fall off the van and knock me out cold. Just weird things like that, you know. And but then as you get more and more concussions, the clumsier you get. And now it's like I go out to walk the dog. If I don't take a cane with me, she'll knock me over, and I'll, you know, there I am again laying on the street with a dog licking my face.
Hey, aren't you coming up on a year anniversary of starting your site?
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. I might be. I'm not sure if it was the 28th or the 29th.
Because, you know, I looked it up one time when your first post was, and it was within a day or two of ours. Because the Fiend's one-year anniversary is this Friday.
Wow.
The 30th.
Yeah, it's right in
you
there.
You weren't podcasting at first, though, right? You were just
No, blogging. I was just writing. Yeah.
When did you start podcasting?
I think it was about a month or two after that.
How'd you come to do that, and how'd you figure out how to do it?
I had thought about, let's see now. I had thought about recording some of my articles. And so, posting a few of them as written articles, my wife said, you know, basically said, are you ever going to record these? And so she bought what's that little mic called? I don't have it in front of me. It's the same one you use with the mic on both sides.
The Zoom H2?
Yeah, yeah. So she bought me one of those, and I started recording the articles that I'd already written. And it kind of immediately, we started getting a lot more hits on the website. So she was like, you know, you got to do this. Get it done. Make this thing pay off.
Cool. Has it paid off?
Well, yeah, actually, we've had donations that have covered all the costs so far.
Oh, I heard you talk about that, yeah.
Yeah, and we've got like a little war chest of, I think it's about like $150 left over. So I was thinking of doing a local radio thing, but I'm not sure we're going to stay in the area, so we might wait for
that.
Well,
you could do that anywhere. You know, you can get those 100 milliwatt transmitters that are built in Hong Kong on eBay for like $50 each with shipping. So to get two of them, that'd be $100. But the shipping can take like 2 months. So if you're going to be moving, you don't want to order one and have it show up when you're gone.
Right. Yeah, we're not really sure. We have
Wyoming?
Property in... That would be nice. No, we've got property in Arkansas, and we've got property in Missouri, and so, but we don't really want to live in Arkansas or Missouri, so I don't know. My wife really likes New Mexico and Arizona out in that area.
Yeah, I'd pick those over the other ones.
Yeah, and I like the solitude, too, of the desert. Is just
sell the land and move there.
Yeah, well, the market's not so good for selling land, but...
I had a half acre that I sold to somebody for $600 to buy an AK-47 in New Mexico. It was total. I've never seen it. It was rattlesnake land. It was like my great uncle had gotten it in a land scam that bilked him of his life savings. And wow. He ended up with like 10 acres in a few different plots in New Mexico in the 50s. He'd had what they called shell shock in World War II, so his brain was not functioning perfectly. Mm-hmm. And he got bilked by this company in Los Angeles that was getting investors to drill for oil. It was a very common thing in that part of New Mexico at that time. And one of the things that I got that my dad gave me along with this half acre of land was a box of correspondence between my uncle and this company, you know, increasing anger from my uncle, until he was finally put in a mental institution and or a sanitarium, they called it back then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, letters from him talking about ghosts in his room and funny smells in his brain. And wow. And it was kind of funny because I ended up donating it to the state of New Mexico, which sounds kind of statist, but it was so perfect I couldn't not do this. It was like... about 5 years ago, I'd posted about the Zoom H2. I did some. I was one of the first people who got one, and I did some reviews of them that kind of went viral. Mm-hmm. And this guy that I played in a band with for a minute in like 1986 wrote me, and he's like, "Hey, Michael, I just found you online. I'm a an official state historian for the state of New Mexico, and I'm thinking of recording sounds of the New Mexico landscape for our collection, and the Zoom H2 seems good. And I read the article and I saw it was you, and I remembered you, and I started chatting with him, and it was like, and he, you know, he is like the official top state historian for the state of New Mexico. And I'm like, really? I have something I could give you. Cause it was just collecting dust. And I was like, I don't need this. And he was really into it. Cause he was like, yeah, he actually had written an article about on the internet about these land scams. So he was really happy to get it.
Yeah. I actually, I saw when you were trying to sell that, that's the one I very first saw you for the first time.
Hmm. That must've been on like Metal Militia or something, huh?
Survival Podcast Forum.
There you go.
You actually, somebody over there attacked you, tried to say it was a scam or something, and it was like...
I remember that.
Yeah.
I don't know why he thought it was a scam. It was a piece of shit land for a piece of shit price.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was, it went to a guy who wanted it for what it was, which was, you know, he lived in a big city, and he wanted to own a piece of land that if the shit hits the fan, he could go out with a GPS unit and find it and say, this is my land. I have the deed. Go away. And, mm-hmm. you know, bug out with the rattlesnakes 100 miles from any water.
Well, you know, going back to the earlier story, that's exactly what my dad did in the late 70s. It was just like, tell society I've had enough. I'm going to the desert.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were just talking about how fabulously popular our podcasts are. They're each... I think ours is reaching at least 700 people based on the amount of downloads and the fact that it's a few other places like YouTube and LRN. I'm starting to get a lot of email, too. Like, a lot of... and it's a lot of, like, the same different people sending me the same news item over and over and over. Which is better than nobody sending it. So I'm not going to say, don't send me that crap. You know, go ahead and send
it. Do you get a lot of hate mail? Really?
None. I get a lot of hate on Facebook because I'm active on there and I chat and I, you know, have my settings so anybody, not just my friends, can see it. And some of it's like from actual people I knew in person and knew well and called friends in San Francisco who are just such entrenched liberal nanny fucks that they think I'm a right winger. They're really confused. And the ones who know I'm not and know what libertarianism is think I'm a nut and they're correct and they're perfect and I'm wrong. You know, what is it? The conservatives think the government doesn't do things well, so it should only do really important things. Liberals think the government doesn't do anything well, so it should do everything. Wasn't that it?
I haven't got a lot of hate mail. I've got a couple that were really intensely hating me. But generally, I get amazingly kind and respectful emails. It really kind of shocked me. Because, you know, my experience on the internet, I did a lot of, I haven't in years, but early on I did a lot of posting over at FARC.com. And that's like that's like the flames of hell right there, you know. You say, and you misspell something, and you're some grammar Nazi is going to eat you alive there. So it almost encourages people to spell things backwards just to mess with them.
The main place I get really intense hate that's actually directed at my beliefs and the way I articulate them is comments on YouTube on the Guns and Weed movie, because that movie has gotten a shitload of views. Like the trailer's up to nearly 30,000, and the movie, you know, like the first few chapters of it are like 20 some thousand views, and other people have reposted it and it's got a lot of views. So, I mean, you get these people from Europe just going, who don't get it, who are, and from America, but especially Europe, who are like, weed is good, guns are of the devil, you are a warmonger like Bush, you know. Oh. Which is, I mean, I didn't like guns until about 5 years ago. Basically, someone broke into our house in L.A., and I said, honey, we're getting a shotgun. And she said, I don't want a shotgun. That's saying the world's a bad place. And I said, sometimes the world's a bad place, and I love you. So we got a shotgun, and, you know, we went out and tried it, and she's like, I love this. I want to get more guns. And now she carries a, you know, Glock Model 23 in her purse.
That is perfect.
But, you know, it's funny. It's like she and I go to a gun show, and, you know, she'll be standing next to me, and I'll pick up a gun, and the guy behind, or the couple, or the guy behind the table will be like, you know, say something to her like, oh, she, you know, you're, I don't see a lot of wives who go along to gun shows and let their husbands buy guns. And she's like, I'm here to get me stuff. And they're really impressed. But, you know, I've been anti-war since I was five, and I equated guns with war. So I thought guns were bad.
Yeah.
Government guns are bad. Guns are great.
Yeah. You know, in your movie, and let's just kind of give a little plug for it, that everybody needs to watch that movie. I didn't get to watch it until just recently, but it's really good. And one of the things that really struck me that you talked about in the movie is this ridiculous, like in one city, hey, you want pot? Fine. You know, just have a script and go down and pick out what kind you want. It's good. You have a gun? Kill him! You know, and then another city is like, you have a gun? No problem. You have weed? Kill him! You know, it's illogical that these two objects, these two inanimate objects, are demonized the way that they are. It's just, it's crazy.
Well, the easy way to sum that up is California and Wyoming, you know, the place we moved from and the place we live now. Gun laws and weed laws are completely the opposite. In California, you know, you can get a prescription for weed if you have, you know, ennui. And even if you don't have a prescription, it's barely, you know, it's like a traffic ticket or less if you've got small amounts of it on you. And if you have a gun on you in public in California, you're going to prison.
If you survive the arrest.
For at least a year. Yeah, if you survive the arrest. And in Wyoming, you can walk into a store, buy a gun, buy the bullets, walk out in the parking lot and load it and stick it in your pocket legally and walk around with it without a permit. And, you know, if you get busted with over an ounce of weed here, you are going to prison. So, you know, we moved here because, I mean, we believe in all those rights, but we don't smoke weed. So we picked the gun place and left the weed place. And as far as people's general attitudes about everything else, they're equally ridiculous in both places. You know, in California, they want to steal all your money to feed crack babies and illegal immigrants. And boy, I sound like Archie Bunker there. And you know, in Wyoming, they want to steal a bunch of your, not all your money, but some, most of your money, you know, to kill brown people in Iraq and pay for anti-meth billboards around the state that are basically child pornography. You know, if I put those billboards up in my yard, my neighbors would lynch me. You know, they would burn my house to the ground if I put up, I mean, they have big billboards here on the main roads that have like 12-year-old girls with sullen eyes following some 40-year-old trucker into a bathroom. If I put that on my lawn, my neighbors would kill me, but the state does it, so it's okay.
Yeah, I kind of ranted on that. I can't remember which podcast it was, but I kind of ranted on that here recently, that the state wastes so much money on stupid things that don't convince anybody of anything.
Oh, I think they make you want to try it. I mean, because, you know, the kids in those ads are still like movie star thin with high cheekbones, and they're not really meth addicts.
They're actors,
beautiful actors that they you know, that they paid in New York or San Francisco and had a casting call and found the best looking ones and then put make, you know, zombie makeup on their eyes and put them in compromising positions. I mean, I read that book, Go Ask Alice, when I was a kid, and it was about a girl who hooks herself out for drugs and commits suicide. And I was like, drugs. I want to try those. You remember that book?
I didn't read it, but I remember when it was popular.
Yeah, it was like pre-Oprah Book Club popular, like that popular. Like every if you cared about your kids, you had to buy that book for them. And, you know, I said this on an episode earlier, but I'll repeat it. It's worth repeating. I thought I was the only person who had that effect, that book had that effect on. I was reading an interview with Marilyn Manson, and he said he started taking drugs because his school made him read that book.
That's classic. That's exactly it, though. The anti-drug people that are really the anti-drug warriors, it's like everything that crosses their mind, if they would just realize that everything they think is backwards. So there was an episode of Simpsons where Homer had this card that all he had to do was look at it, and it said, whatever Bart tells you, do the opposite. And it's like, yes, if all those really crazy anti-drug people, whatever thought came into their mind, if they would do the opposite, they might actually have an impact on lowering the amount of drug addiction in the U.S.
Or if they did nothing. Yeah. You know, there's a saying in Al-Anon I really like, which is, don't just do something, stand there. Which I think everyone should do more of.
Yeah. There's a on the local radio stations around here where I'm at in Western Ohio, they buy the government buys time to with these they're like an inner city kids arguing about whether or not to go to school or whether to drop out and stuff. And it's like, yeah, you're playing this on a classic rock station with an audience of 50-year-old white men, you know.
50-year-old white men who's like highest moment in their life was like the time that they got to sit in the sixth row of an Ozzy concert back in 75.
Yeah. And you're trying to have some, you know, kids with inner city accents talking about whether or not to drop out of school. You're having a great influence there, government money.
Yo, it's dope not to drop out.
And you know that if an inner city kid actually did hear that message, they would just shake their head and say, yeah,
I'm going to drop out now. I wasn't gonna, but now I will. Yeah. The government's dumb and we're smart, Ben. They're just big dum-dums. We're smart. They haven't had their brains hit enough like us. You by falling and me by drugs.
But if we could control everything, then it'd be better.
Yeah, well, I have a running joke about dragging people off at gunpoint to libertarian re-education camps, but I don't really mean it.
Is it okay if I take a shot at the Ron Paul followers?
Well, considering it wouldn't be a Bad Quaker episode without that happening, go ahead.
I appreciate them, and I in a way I feel sorry for them, because I know that in about a year from now they're going to be looking around going, what did I spend all that money on? You know.
Well, you know, there's an you watch the Onion, right? Yeah. Onion News. There's an Onion News video after Obama won that was like, it was all the Obama humpers, like, now that their guys won, they feel useless in life. You know, it's going to be the same thing when Ron Paul does.
Yeah, when your hero worship is on that height and that level, and then the little bubble pops, it's like, you know.
Well, I'm a non-voting anarchist who's going to vote for Ron Paul, but I don't think he's going to be president. Does anyone, I guess people believe that.
Some
do.
Still. And, you know, they think they're going to go into the convention and there's going to be a brokered convention and he's going to pull out all these magic delegates. And, you know, but they cheat. They've cheated at every single state. And why wouldn't?
Oh, if he won every delegate, the GOP would put up someone else. And if, you know, like you said, if he somehow became president, someone he'd be killed. And no, he's not going to. No.
Again, as an anarchist, I don't believe it's morally correct for me to take my will and join in with a bunch of other anarchists and vote our will upon the rest of the public. That's as unethical as the public voting their will on me.
Well, yeah. Although voting Ron, if Ron Paul won, and I don't want to sound like those people, but I probably will here. But if Ron Paul won, you know, he basically voting for Ron Paul would be voting to set the slaves free or freer mm-hmm. than they are, which really disgusts me that he's getting about, you know, probably 5% of the country would mm-hmm. vote for him, which means 95% of the country want more slavery and 5% want less. I'm voting for him, and I've been taken to task by anarchists for this. I'm voting for him to add one more tick mark to the popularity contest because I really kind of want to see what the yeah. numbers are going to be. I don't think it's going to affect anything, and I really don't feel like I'm participating in the unethical stealing of government by voting. I want my vote to count, you know, which it wouldn't in the system anyway, because I live in a winner take all Republican Christian Sharia state, and when I lived in California, I lived in a winner take all secular humanist Democrat state, Sharia state.
Yeah, I'm kind of a hypocrite on it because I voted for, I actually had to go down and register as a Republican vote in 2008 to vote for him, and I voted for him in 1988, so.
Yeah, I know, you're old, you voted for him before all these kids were born.
Yeah, you heard me say that before, huh?
Yeah, I didn't get it that, I'm a little younger than you, and I didn't even get it until a few years ago. I mean, I voted for Bob Barr in the last election. Because he was on the ballot. And I was like, well, Ron Paul's good, but he's not on the ballot in California.
Well, if you're going with the thought that let's make a statement, let's get some attention, then, you know, that's a perfectly legitimate thing, you know.
And I took my sticker that says the red, white, and blue I voted sticker and took it home and put it on my rifle.
Yeah, speaking of which, I just bought a bunch of stuff online to build up a real nice shotgun.
Well, you know that my saying is that the way you register guns now is by mentioning them on the internet. So go ahead.
Well, I got a Mossy knockoff from the mid-60s that cost me a box of shells, box of 20-gauge shells. So I stripped that dude down.
I want to get some cheap guns. There, people I know have bought guns for like $25 at garage sales here in Casper. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah, you got to look at what you got, though. I stripped it right down to every single piece, took it apart, and I needed some internal parts for it that were like close to $50 just for the internal parts. But it should be a pretty sweet shotgun when I get done with it.
Cool. So we've got about 4 minutes left here. Not that there's really a time cutoff point, but there is sort of per segment because of the way we're doing this. And I think three is a good number. Three is a good number. So, you know, one hour. 1 hour is all I would expect anyone to listen to of my super group 4 in the morning podcast first episode. So, Ben, you have any closing arguments?
I would argue that he is guilty based on the most obvious facts that almost no one saw him do it.
Well, I want my vote on this jury to count, so I will concur. And, you know, they wouldn't have arrested him if he wasn't guilty.
I know there's a lot of... Oh, go ahead.
And you know, I'm in a bad mood today, so I want to punish somebody with the government guns. So I think
have you ever
guilty.
Been on a jury?
No. I've gotten out of jury duty twice because I could not afford to take off work. I was living, you know, hand to mouth in a temp job, and you know, literally would have starved to death if I'd been on a jury for more than a few days. So I got out of it. In LA, I got called for jury duty and would have had to rent a car to get to it. It was a really weird situation. It was like my wife, we have one car. My wife worked at an office, so she took the car every day, and I was in this really weird place where the nearest courthouse where I'd be called jury was like 27 miles away, and it was like three buses, like it would have been 6 hours each way on public transportation, and they would not let me off for that, but I was in the pool but didn't get called. So, but I would love to be on a jury. I would love to do my civic duty, and I hope I get called, because it's everyone's civic duty. I would love to be on a jury. I'll just say that.
I have to admit my guilt here. I was called up for jury duty and actually would have been seated on the jury. And there was a series of questions, and unfortunately, by my stupid Quakerness, I have to not only be honest, but I have to be open. And also the fact that I, you know, can't swear an oath, and I can't, like, raise my hand and stand up and sit down like a little puppet. I can't do any of those things. So I ended up getting called up to the judge with the prosecutor and the defense attorney there, and they're like, you know, what's going on? And I had all my medical papers with me in case I wanted to escape from the mess. And I was like, you know, this is where I'm at. This is how many head injuries I've got. And that guy gets sitting over there that's accused of having meth in his trunk. And he was pulled over because of a tail light two blocks from a school. And you guys are going to slam him into prison because it's his, like, fourth time or something like that. I go, if you put me on that jury, that dude's walking. I guarantee it. And so I was out of there.
I have no problem with oaths and standing like a little good citizen and being on a jury like for something like that. The thing is, though, in my town, in my county, there is about one jury trial a month, and because they just plea everyone out. And the one a month is generally a real crime.
Where someone's actually harmed.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, it's breaking into something or stealing something or frauding somebody or something. That's what gets the jury trials here. But I do it. I do it regardless. I will do my civic duty.
I would have no problem putting somebody like that in jail, you know, but somebody who's just picked up two blocks away from a school on a bad taillight, and then the cop uses that as an excuse, you know, let him go.
Oh, if I were on a drug case, I could be impartial and obey the law and uphold the law, and I would love to be on a jury
for our friends in Langley listening in right now.
Let the record show. Let the record show. Or our friends in Casper.
Oh, man.
I actually thought, I do a lot of like IP blocking in my HT access file, just of like people that are creeps. I've actually thought about blocking like certain local IP block ranges, but I haven't done it yet.
I've had to block a bunch of Russian IPs.
Yeah. Damn Russians. They make good rifles, though. I have a few of them. Okay, I think we're at the end of our time here. You got anything else, brother man?
No, I think that about covers it. Hey, nice talk.
Thank you for...
nice talking to you.
Thank you for being the guest on the first episode of Anarchist Superstars. I like that better than Anarchist Supergroup. Anarchist Superstars? Antichrist Superstar? All right, we'll figure it out.
Take it easy.
Thanks.